Mr. Moody, the justice said when Broome sat down. A statement for the defence. Moody rose promptly.
Thank you, sir, he said to the justice. I shall be brief.
His hands were shaking. He splayed them firmly on the desktop before him to steady himself, and then in a voice that sounded much more confident than he felt, he said, I will begin by reminding Mr. Broome that Miss Wetherill has in fact thrown off her dependency, an achievement for which she has earned my most sincere admiration and respect. Certainly, as Mr. Broome has taken such pleasure in describing to you all, Miss Wetherill's disposition is of the kind that leaves her prey to the myriad temptations of addiction. I myself have never touched the smoke of the poppy, as Mr. Broome has also assured you he has not, and I hazard to guess that one reason for our mutual abstinence is fear. Fear of the drug's probable power over us. Fear of its addictive quality. Fear of what we might see or do were we to succumb to its effects. I make this remark to emphasize the fact that Miss Wetherill's weakness in this regard is not unique to her. And I say again that she has my commendation for having committed herself so wholeheartedly to the project of her own reform. But, whatever Mr. Broome might have you believe, we are not here to adjudicate Miss Wetherill's temperament, nor to deliver a verdict upon her character. We are here to adjudicate how justice might best be served with respect to three accusations. One of forgery, one of disorderly conduct, and one of assault. I do not disagree with Mr. Broome's contention that forgery is a serious crime, and nor do I find fault with his assertion that grievous assault is the close cousin of homicide. However, and as my case will shortly demonstrate, Miss Wetherill is innocent of all three crimes. She has not committed forgery. She has attempted in no way to assault Mr. Emery Staines, and her collapse on the afternoon of the 20th of March could hardly be called disorderly, any more than the lady who was escorted from this very courtroom 10 minutes ago could be accused of the same. I have not the slightest doubt that the testimony of witnesses will demonstrate my client's innocence, and that they will do so in very short order. In anticipation of this happy outcome, Mr. Justice, esteemed members of the court, ladies and gentlemen, I do not hesitate to place the matter in the good hands of the law. Moody sat, his heart thumping. He looked up at the justice, hoping for some token of affirmation, but Justice Kemp was bent over his ledger, taking notes. Broome was looking down the bench at Moody, a very nasty expression on his face. Fellows, sitting next to him, leant over to whisper something in his ear, and after a moment he smiled and whispered something back.
"Thank you, Mr. Moody,"
the justice said at last, underlining what he had written with a flourish and putting down his pen.
"The defendant will now rise. Mr. Broome, you have the floor."
Broome stood and thanked the justice a second time.
"Miss Wetherill," he said, turning to her, "until the night of the 14th of January, how did you make your living?"
"Mr. Broome," snapped the justice at once, "what did I just say? Miss Wetherill is a member of the old profession. Let that suffice."
"Yes, sir," said Broome. He began again. "Miss Wetherill, on the night of the 14th of January, you made a decision regarding your former employment, is that correct?"
"Yes."
"What was it?"
"I quit."
"What do you mean when you say that you quit?"
"I quit whoring."
The justice sighed.
"Continue,"
he said with a tone of resignation.
"Did you take up alternative employment at once?"
Broome said, moving on.
"Not at once," Anna said. "But when Mrs. Wells arrived in town, she took me in at the Wayfarer's Fortune. I started learning the tarot and astral charts, with the idea that I might assist her in telling fortunes. I thought I might earn a living as her assistant."
"At the time that you quit your former employment,
Did you have this future purpose in mind?
No, said Anna. I didn't know that Mrs. Wells was coming before she arrived.
In the period before Mrs. Wells arrived in Hokitika, how then did you expect that you would support yourself?
I didn't have a plan, Anna said.
No plan at all?
No, sir.
You did not have a nest egg, perhaps? Or another form of surety?
No, sir.
In that case, you made a radical step, said Broome pleasantly. Mr. Broome, snapped the justice.
Yes, sir?
Make your point.
Certainly.
This deed of gift, Broome produced it, names you, Miss Wetherall, as the lucky inheritor of £2,000. It is dated October 11th of last year. The donor, Mr. Emery Staines, disappeared without a trace upon the 14th of January, the very same day that you, as the fortunate recipient of this extraordinary sum, decided to quit walking the streets and mend your ways, a decision made without provocation and without a plan for the future. Now, I object, said Moody, rising. Mr. Broome has not established that Miss Wetherill had no provocation to change her circumstances of employment.
The justice allowed this, and Broome, looking peeved, was obliged to put the question to Anna.
Did you have provocation, Miss Wetherill, in making the decision to cease prostituting yourself?
Yes, said Anna. She looked at Moody again. He nodded slightly, encouraging her to speak. She drew a breath and said, I fell in love. With Mr. Staines. The night of the 14th of January was the first night we spent together, and, well, I didn't want to keep whoring after that.
Broome was frowning. That was the very same night you were arrested for attempted suicide, was it not?
Yes, Anna said. I thought he didn't love me, that he couldn't love me, and I couldn't bear it, and I did a terrible thing.
Do you then admit you made an attempt upon your own life that night?
I meant to go under, said Anna, but I never set out to do myself.